Case number 08-1195, Iberdrola Renewables Incorporated, petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Lewis for the petitioner, Ms. Albert for the respondent, Ms. Seitz for the intervener.
Good morning, counsel. Good
morning. May it please the court, my name is Mark Lewis. I am appearing on behalf of the petitioner, Iberdrola Renewables, Inc. Iberdrola was formerly known as PPM Energy, so to be clear, any references in the record below referring to PPM Energy are references to Iberdrola. The underlying orders should be remanded. They're not based on reasoned decision-making. Two examples, based on FERC's own words, demonstrate the lack of agency analysis and rationale. First, in the initial order below, FERC said, this negotiated rate is calculated from a formula. On rehearing, Iberdrola asked the agency to apply its standards applicable to formula rates. On the rehearing order, FERC said, Iberdrola is, quote, incorrect when stating that Alliance's negotiated rates are calculated according to a formula. It is not reasoned decision-making for the agency to say it is calculated by a formula. It is not calculated by a formula.
Counsel, wait a minute. We're getting a little afield here. Isn't the key, your key argument, that the agreement is ambiguous?
Yes.
Would you point to the language in the agreement that you describe as ambiguous?
Certainly, Your Honor. The rate principles themselves.
No, just the language of the agreement.
The rate principles are appended to the agreement.
Okay.
The agreement says the rates are calculated in accordance with the rate principles.
Okay. Where is that? Let's look at the exact language.
The operative rate principle is.
No, where's the exact language you're referring to? I just want to trace it through.
Is that in the JA?
Yes.
What page in the JA are we looking at?
We're looking at, if we go to.
It should be in the brief, shouldn't it?
It is. It's in the brief as well.
Yeah.
But I was just going to pull it from the joint appendix. Mm-hmm. And if I go to
JA 110 is what I have.
That's correct. That is where you see the rate principles.
Read the language
of
the agreement. Because I had some difficulty understanding exactly what the linguistic ambiguity was.
And find the depreciation rate. Come on. Changes, this is on page 112, JA 112, rate principle number 11. Changes in transporter's operating costs will be reflected in its rates from time to time for the primary term and any extension of the primary term of the agreement. And where that is ambiguous, Your Honor.
What about that language that's ambiguous? I don't quite understand why that's ambiguous.
In FERC rate making, the mere concept of changes in operating costs could mean anything. We don't know what those operating costs are, how they're calculated, the basis for.
Well, the ambiguity is what the word operating cost means.
In the precise language, yes, in terms of what the parties meant by what
changes.
No.
What are you saying the term operating cost is ambiguous?
Well, changes.
Changes? Which is the ambiguity?
It's the scope of the changes in what is meant by changes in operating costs. That's an unclear phrase when you're in the world of FERC rate making. It's not precise. There are 1,000-page records developed in terms of and developed before the agency.
I thought the issue is whether FERC approval was required. And if you go back to JA 110, shippers electing negotiated rates agree to pay such rates without regard to any action or determination of the FERC. Now, what's ambiguous about that?
Well, the ambiguity is that Alliance had said to the commission that we will not change the operating costs in our rates, except
you're talking about subsequent extrinsic evidence. I think
I'm talking about prior extrinsic evidence.
Right. Well, I'm at least my question is there anything if we pick up the operative agreements, the precedent agreement, the transportation agreement, where's the ambiguity in that as to the issue before us, and that is, does FERC have a role in approval here?
The issue...
Where it's specifically addressed.
The ambiguity is because every other element of this formula, of these rate principles, has precision to it. The element of changes in operating costs is wide open. The ambiguity is the silence. This court has held that silence...
Are you saying there's ambiguity as to whether FERC has a role in approving the rates negotiated?
The ambiguity is that the formula has this wide open issue that changes in operating costs will be reflected in rates. How are those determined? Are they solely within the discretion of one party to the contract? We submit the answer is no, because that same party to the contract repeatedly told the agency...
But that's a different issue. I thought the issue was whether FERC had a role here. The issue you're talking about is whether there's a contract claim between the parties. But the issue I'm interested in right now is the question of whether FERC had a role.
And what the...
I don't see how the ambiguity you point to addresses
because
that issue.
If I may, Your Honor, what Alliance, the pipeline, told the agency was that revised negotiating rates using updated operation and maintenance costs must be approved by the commission.
You have to go outside this document.
Yes.
To find the ambiguity.
Yes.
And is that, as a matter of law, is that what we're supposed to do?
I believe
at the contract, and if the contract's clear, that ends.
We submit it's not clear, and we submit that
the agency
said it's unambiguous, and we don't think they're entitled to any deference.
I want to go back to where I was.
Yes, sir.
Is your contention that the pipeline is not increasing operating cost?
Our contention is they are increasing operating costs.
So there's no question that changes in operating cost is not ambiguous with respect to the changes that the pipeline has made. There's indisputable that it's operating cost, right?
That's correct.
If that's true, where's the ambiguity?
Actually, Your Honor, we have no idea what are in those costs. We were not given any opportunity to. They were just said our costs went from $42 million to $67 million.
You have no reason to contest the question of whether they're including operating costs or not.
We don't know what's included in there. We have their representation that there are operating costs, but
you have no reason to. So, but in other words, it's not a dispute here as to what the word operating cost means. You're raising a separate question as to whether or not the pipeline is throwing costs in that are not operating costs.
Yeah, we just don't know. That's correct. We don't know what costs are there because we never before had the cost gone up so much.
And what the language means. That's what I'm getting at.
I'm not sure if you went to five different rate experts, if we had a chance to adduce evidence, if you went to five different rate experts and said, hey, what's included in this term operating costs? I think you'd get five different answers. We don't know. Now, there are defined terms in the FERC regulations with operating and maintenance terms.
That gets to the separate question then, which Judge Griffith raised.
Contract question.
Yes. The separate question is whether or not there is any provision in the contract to have FERC approve the pipeline's determination of what operating costs are.
And our position is
that you would have been an idiot to sign an agreement that didn't allow you to protest against that.
Well, our stronger position, quite honestly, is...
It's not whether you're an idiot or not? No.
I suspect
not there at the...
I'm referring to the company, not you personally.
I'm worried how my client will answer that question. I think that the point there is that the contract, the parties had this precedent agreement with these rate principles that said operating costs will be changed. Then you had Alliance saying to FERC that under the formula, that the rate formula that it filed with its application satisfied the rate principles. So it needed a detailed rate formula to implement the rate principles. The rate formula was filed in the tariff. The pipeline described in its application the FERC approval process. In the order on that, FERC never, ever said anything critical about the rate formula. It never took any issue with the rate formula. The agency said, hey, it's in the wrong place. You don't need it in your tariff.
Let me come back to it. Your contention is the ambiguity here is not so much the language operating cost, The ambiguity, in your view, is how that is to be determined.
Yes.
If there's a dispute.
It's the implementation of the language is unclear.
So that's where you claim there's an ambiguity, not in the language itself.
That's correct. It's the implementation of the language. There's no process. There's no way to know with certainty what was intended.
Two possibilities, which is that you relied on the pipeline to be straight and honest on it, or you didn't. You insisted that FERC have an opportunity to review it.
That's correct.
That's what you're claiming it. So that's the ambiguity of the process.
That's the proper way to articulate it. And our position is the parties, based on Alliance's own representations, the pipeline said repeatedly, FERC must approve. FERC, for years afterward, has said, under the agreement, we must approve.
Now the question is whether FERC reasonably interpreted the agreement to provide. You parties didn't have to go back to FERC to determine whether operating costs were legitimate or not.
And we submit that the answer is no, FERC is wrong. FERC itself, until this case, the only time FERC has said costs need to be approved, do not need approval, is the one time they were asked to approve the costs. Even after, this is a remarkable fact, after the orders that are before you today, the next year, Alliance filed to adjust its rates again. It was a small rate increase. Nobody protested. FERC reverted and in its order said, under the agreement, costs can be changed as approved by the commission. The agency itself, except when asked to undertake that approval, repeatedly says, seems to think that when it moved that approval to the contract, that the agency repeatedly says, under the agreements, we have to approve these costs.
Is this an argument you made to the commission?
Yes.
It is?
Yes. We argued to that, I'm sorry, which aspect?
That the prior approval, the prior language by FERC is binding it against what it's doing now?
No, because that argument was raised for the very first time. The agency itself brought up the subsequent approval orders in the rehearing order. And we're not required to go back to the agency on another rationale for the approval of the same basic decision. So that's why we came directly to this court.
FERC argues that the contention that they agreed to your approach would have been in violation of their responsibilities under the statute is not legitimately before us.
I'm sorry. I didn't follow
well,
that.
One of the arguments is if FERC's interpretation of this contract is contrary to the law, and FERC says that issue is not legitimately before us.
We are not challenging their approval of the contract in 1999 or 2000. So any suggestion that we are is a bit of a red herring. We couldn't challenge the approval in 2000. We're not saying the contract as approved should be changed. We're saying the contract as approved, the process, the certificate orders as issued, should be interpreted consistent with the intent of the parties at the time.
And the law.
And the law, of course.
Yes.
And that's where, for example, when you had the pipeline saying these costs must be approved by the commission, and the commission never, ever criticized that. One of the things you'll see is the pipeline will argue that and has argued, or FERC has argued in brief, that the commission said, oh, we're not going to review costs. The important thing is if you look at that order, under the discussion, if you were to draw up a table of contents of FERC's preliminary determination, there's a discussion. There's a section dealing with approval of initial rates. Several competitor pipelines challenged the initial rates of Alliance. FERC said, hey, the shippers aren't challenging these rates. We're not going to get into the competitor pipeline issues. We're not going to delve into the basis of these rates. In a completely separate section of the order, three sections removed, dealing with tariff issues, FERC said, that formula doesn't need to be in the tariff. You should relocate it. They didn't say delete it. They didn't say change it. They said relocate it. Put it in the service agreement.
But it was gone.
That is an ambiguity that we cannot explain, Your Honor. And it seems, as I said, from those orders, that FERC seems to think it's in the agreements. And we were not there at the time. We don't know. There's certainly no evidence that anybody changed the commercial deal. But it's not in the – that is not there. And that's why we say you need to look to the extrinsic evidence to understand what the intent of the parties was at the time. But certainly FERC did not criticize the rate formula. This notion that somehow FERC wouldn't look into costs related to a negotiated rate is also a red herring. We're not suggesting this is a cost-based rate under traditional FERC precedent. What we're saying is this was the contract that everybody agreed to. The negotiated rate had a bunch of fixed elements in the contract. Alliance says the parties agree not to challenge certain elements in the formula, and we agree not to change certain elements of the formula. FERC repeats that language. The implication of certain elements not being challenged, certain elements not being changed, is clearly that other elements may be challenged, other elements may be changed. And that's where nobody took issue with that, and we believe that's the intent of the parties. And with that, if there are no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, seeing none, we'll hear from the respondent. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. Judith Albert for FERC. I would like to address first the issue of ambiguity. The Commission did not say that the plain language of the firm transportation agreement was unambiguous. When FERC construed the contract between these parties, the FERC looked at the language of the contract, the language of the open season precedent agreement. The FERC looked at its negotiated rates policy, which all parties were familiar with at the time they signed first the open season agreements and secondly the firm transportation agreements. FERC also considered the fact that the language in the open precedent agreement, which does not call for FERC review of changes if the parties elect the negotiated rate. That language is the same language that is in the firm transportation agreements, which the parties all signed and which control the transactions here.
Suppose the pipeline included in the term operating cost a massive addition which was clearly not an operating cost by anybody's theory. What remedy did the shipper have?
Alliance is bound by the terms of the contract. The shipper can file a complaint at the commission alleging breach of contract. Presumably, the shipper, like any other party to a contract, can also file a breach of contract suit in court. There are also other measures that the shipper can take under Alliance's tariff, none of which I understand Iberdrola has taken. These include an arbitration proceeding and an informal complaint proceeding at Alliance.
Did the contract include an arbitration clause?
The firm transportation agreements refer to the Alliance's general terms of service, which is located in their tariff. So the arbitration and other procedures are incorporated into the agreements.
But there is no question, in your view, I have to ask counsel about that, is if the pipeline had included in the term operating cost an item that the shipper contested was not an operating cost by any legitimate definition of accounting, they could have filed a complaint with FERC to that effect?
Sure. They could have filed a complaint alleging breach of contract. Now, FERC has...
What procedure does FERC have for that? Under what statutory provision or what regulation would they have been able to do that?
There's a complaint procedure set up in the Commission's regulations and under the Natural Gas Act, Section 5, shippers can also file complaints. I also note, as counsel did, that costs is not some really nebulous idea. Costs are set out in the Uniform System of Costs.
I understand the general accounting principles, too, but I just wanted to know what would be the remedy to the shipper if the pipeline had included something that was arguably not an operating cost.
The same remedy that's available to any other signer of a short-term contract or a long-term contract, you sue for breach of contract.
You can file a complaint with FERC or sue in court, either one?
Yes.
Okay.
There are no further questions?
Seeing none, we assigned times as a maximum and not a minimum, so if you would, you can end if you'd like to.
I have no questions.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We'll hear from the intervener.
May it please the court, Virginia Seitz, for representing Intervenor Alliance Pipeline. I think it's critical in this case to understand the sequence of events here. In the open season precedent agreement, as FERC counsel just indicated, there was no provision for FERC approval of costs. When the certificate application was filed, there was inserted into the rate formula a statement that said FERC would approve costs. That was then followed by FERC's preliminary determination in this case, which stated both that the rate formula and rate principles should be removed from the tariff and be placed in the party's contract, and, as Iberdrola Council says, a separate statement indicating that FERC, as a general matter, does not review negotiated rates or the components thereof. That statement was interpreted by my client, Alliance, to mean not only to take this provision out of the tariff, but also to remove the provision for FERC approval of costs. That was done in the firm transportation agreements, which were actually signed with shippers in 1999. The best evidence of what that contract actually means, therefore, is the change from the initial formula in the tariff to the contract that was actually signed. That excision, that omission of language, that deliberate change has to have some meaning, and what it means is we understood that order not to allow for FERC approval of costs.
Ms. Seitz, what do you do with the letter from FERC that Iberdrola relies on? It's the January 29th, 2003 letter, which it's represented that Alliance recognizes that the negotiated rates from time to time will be approved by the Commission. What's going on there?
That certainly is an infelicitous phrasing of those letters, and my reading of them is that as approved by the Commission language should actually be read as going at the beginning of the sentence, and what those sentences really mean is that FERC approved the negotiated rate arrangement. Now, if you look at the end of those letters, for example, at the, I think it's page 596 or the very last page of the appendix, it indicates in those letters that those delegated authority letters approving uncontested rate proceedings cannot be to the prejudice of any actual Commission decision or order in a case.
But what I'm concerned about is it makes a representation that Alliance, in its communications with FERC, is acknowledging that there is a role for FERC to play in approving the rates. And it sounds like in an earlier time, based on the same documents, Alliance had a different view of the matter than it does now.
Alliance initially did have a different view of the matter and believed that it was told by FERC to correct its view and omit that language.
But as late as 2003, I mean.
Right, and in addition, if you look at the JA, the very last letter comes most recently in approving our 2009 rates. And I submit to you that is the best evidence that as approved by the Commission language cannot mean what my opponent says, because it follows two FERC decisions straight out saying we're not going to approve a review and approve costs under these contracts. So it literally cannot mean that quote, that same formulation used after two opinions on this matter, cannot mean what my opponent's saying it means. It's bad phrasing. It's unfortunate phrasing.
Your position that the operative contract language here is so clear that we need not look at any other.
Well, I think that the way I stated the history indicates that I believe the best way of looking at it is in the historical context and not so clear by itself. Your reading of the contract is clear by itself, I think, is correct. But in context, it becomes even clearer what the meaning is, which is a deliberate excision of this language saying as approved by the Commission occurred, and that deliberate omission has to have some meaning.
Is it our obligation to read the contract de novo?
No, I think under your opinion in Cajun Electric, what you indicate is if the language of the contract, it's a court decision whether that language on its face is plain and whether you have to move to extrinsic evidence. You're not confronted with that argument here because what the Commission said was, we're looking at the entirety of this context, at the open season agreement, at the certificate application, at our decision, followed by the contract. And so FERC itself is not asking you to find this plain on its face. It's asking you to find the meaning plain in its setting. And so I submit to you, if you look at the entirety of the setting, You know, the most established principles of contract interpretation would say you have to give meaning to that omission.
Counsel, what about the question I asked the petitioner with respect to the possible contention that your client includes in the phrase operating costs something which arguably is not operating cost? Do you agree that FERC is correct in saying that petitioner would have a remedy by going to FERC and filing a complaint?
Yes, there's a breach of contract action that could take place either at FERC or in courts. I understand they have concurrent jurisdiction in this setting. There's a FERC precedent, a famous one called ARCLA, where they make a judgment under apply a variety of different factors and determine whether or not they're going to take jurisdiction of a dispute, contract dispute under a jurisdictional agreement like this, or whether they're going to allow the court to have jurisdiction. There is also in our tariff the general term and condition that requires an informal dispute resolution process. But if you're talking about a remedy in front of a neutral entity, I would say the breach of contract claim is the critical one. And it gives the lie, in a sense, to the claim that this is unilateral rate setting by my client.
You should be careful about using the word lie.
It's an unfortunate phrase on my part. It makes untrue, I think, the statement on their part.
It gets better.
I do. That the contract...
It renders less convincing there.
Well, the contract cannot be interpreted, in my view, not to have a meaning in the word costs. And I do think it is unfair to say that this is in our complete discretion. We have, as FERC recognized, an iterative process where we restate the costs after every few years. Rates went down 1 year, up only lightly from the years 2002 until the year that this dispute arose. Other shippers haven't claimed that we have exercised unreasonable unilateral power under this contract. I just don't think the history or the language of the contract can bear out the argument that this was a contract that they were crazy to sign because it somehow gave us unlimited power. And if it were true, there should have been a protest and to the time in 1999 when they were confronted with a contract which eliminated the words as approved by FERC from the rate
formula.
Don't
you think FERC is wrong in arguing that we can't consider petitioner's argument that FERC's interpretation of the contract would be contrary to general law? FERC says, well, if that can't be before you because they didn't object initially when the tariff was filed. But it's certainly legitimate for a petitioner to argue, is it not, that the interpretation of the contract would render the approval illegal?
As I understand their argument, it's that our interpretation is less plausible because it would have this consequence.
Right, and that's certainly a legitimate argument.
Absolutely. But what I would say...
You disagree with FERC on that.
Well, I hesitate to say that without rereading their brief, but I had thought I had understood
that was a good answer.
All of us. I understood all of us to be saying both that it's not an implausible reading of the contract and that, in fact, the premise on which it's based, which is that we have this unilateral control and that they have no opportunities or recourse to address a wrong imputation into costs, is just simply wrong. There are a lot of avenues that they have to do that. I want to address just quickly the argument.
You're actually out of time.
I am out of time. I apologize.
To hear,
formula
thank
question.
You, counsel. Okay. Counsel had time left.
Counsel had 5 minutes remaining.
You have 5 minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. First off, this court needs to look to the FERC orders as to whether or not FERC claimed these were ambiguous, not necessarily the arguments of counsel. FERC at the rehearing order, Joint Appendix 010, refers to...
I think it's fair to say the FERC orders are a little ambiguous.
It is fair to say that, Your Honor. That's part of the lack of reasoned decision-making.
Who gets discretion to interpret FERC orders?
You do, Your Honor.
Oh, really? They don't get any deference with respect to interpretation of their own orders?
They get some deference, provided that they've not decided, under the Cajun case that was referenced, you know, FERC said on page JA110, there's no need to examine extrinsic evidence.
Well, that's with respect to the contract.
But what you...
I'm asking a question about with respect to FERC's interpretation of its orders.
With respect to FERC's interpretation of its orders, they have to be reasoned. And they have to... So you still have to be able to find a discernible path and rationale.
It's fair to say that agencies get deference with respect to interpretation of their orders?
With respect to interpreting their own orders, that's correct.
All right.
So going back to the preliminary determination, yes. With respect to the orders before you, though, FERC did say on page JA1011, referred to the so-called ambiguous agreement. I mean, that derisive language clearly says they're mocking this notion this is an ambiguous agreement. They said on JA010, there's no need to examine extrinsic evidence. It is not reasonable for the agency to look to extrinsic evidence to support the interpretation that it wants to make today, but say we're not going to look to the extrinsic evidence that goes against the interpretation we're trying to make, and that's what they've done. They did say the agreement is unambiguous. They said the situation is unambiguous, and that is not owed deference by this agency. With respect to the remedy, you have to think about the context here. Alliance made a filing in November of 2007. FERC issued a notice saying,
do you have any claim of ambiguity that doesn't rely on the interpretation of FERC orders?
Yes.
What?
The language in the agreement
operating cost?
Yes.
Oh, I think that's a difficult one.
Changes in operating costs.
That's difficult.
I think the implementation of that is as you referred to the general system of account or the uniform system of accounts, none of that's at play here. There's no method. According to Alliance,
GAAP, general
accounting
principles. Operating cost has a fairly clear definition. There are contracts all the time that in which parties will use the term operating cost without definition. With a clear understanding that that term has a clear meaning.
And what FERC has said in the Southern Company case that we cite in our briefs, when a contract refers to operating costs as this vague term, that there are obligations to support what those costs are.
Well, that's a separate issue.
Yes, it is. That is a separate
issue. Definitional.
Yes, but it is.
Exactly. But Judge Santel puts it, it's not the definition.
That's right. But here, they've not.
Or do you have a problem if the only ambiguity that you can find arguably is in the FERC orders?
Well, you owe them deference, but that's not blinding deference.
No,
so.
But that's not the same as the Cajun question.
That's correct.
Yeah, so that's a more difficult question.
It is. It's a more difficult question, one that can be surmounted, I believe. As to the remedy issue that they were that you inquired of FERC about, you have to remember, Alliance filed the case. FERC issued a notice saying, hey, come and protest. If you have something to say, come say it. That's what we did. For them to invite a protest and then say, we're not going to hear anything. There are no protests to be heard. We're not going to do anything.
No, wait a minute. Different questions. You made a very powerful argument, I thought. Hey, wait a minute. They don't have carte blanche to put any piece of sausage into this called operating cost. And I thought that was a legitimate point, so that's why I pressed. Do you have a remedy on that? No, you do have a remedy.
Yes.
You can file a complaint saying they've put items in operating costs. They're not legitimately interpreted as operating costs.
But we should not be obligated to go file a complaint when the pipeline initiated, because the pipeline
initiated. What's inadequate about that remedy?
Well, the pipeline initiated the complaint, initiated the proceeding, and the commission invited comment, invited protest. We're taking advantage of that right, which, as we said, we believe was contemplated.
Having done that, why is it inadequate to go the route FERC suggests and file contract action?
Well, it goes, there are council said that they're not aware that we followed the form in the tariff to seek relief, and we have. That's outside the record. As a matter of efficiency, from the client perspective and from the judicial administrative perspective, it doesn't make any sense to file a complaint when there's a proceeding
when
that's been initiated.
When has a litigant been worried about judicial efficiency?
Counsel, you're not being totally candid about this. Isn't it fair to say that that procedure doesn't give you the relief you want, because what you really want is to have FERC examine the tariff on traditional cost of service basis?
Only with respect to operating costs. We're not asking for a full-blown Section 4 case.
Sort of a semi.
Yes,
approach.
That's correct.
So even if it's undoubtedly correct that the costs that they're including in the term operating costs are operating costs, that doesn't give you the relief you want, because you really want a tougher standard.
Yep. That's correct. And that's, yes, we want the agency to use its expertise to interpret the contract.
Right. Okay, your time is up also.
Thank you,
so
Your Honor.
Unless my colleagues have further questions, we'll call to halt the proceeding and give us a recess.
Stand, please. This honorable court now stands adjourned until Friday morning at 9:30 a.m.